Bank of America earnings fall big time.
And it's all about the mortgages.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday, Jeremy.
Happy Friday.
It's April 15th.
Coming up, we'll look into the troubles that continue to plague some of the big banks.
We'll talk tech with John Moe of Marketplace Tech Report.
We'll talk about the economic pressures on Libya with a former ambassador to the country.
And can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Well, the guy that made that line famous would rather forget all about it.
We'll hear about that coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Let's start with Bank of America's earnings. The largest bank in the country said this morning its earnings dropped 37% last quarter compared with the same quarter last year. The culprit? Bad mortgages. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial, and he's with us now from New York, as he is each Friday. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
So, Chris, why is Bank of America still having big mortgage problems?
Well, Bank of America, during the financial crisis, was asked by the Fed and the Treasury to purchase Countrywide rather than allowing Countrywide to go bankrupt. That was the big national mortgage lender. They did, and in doing that, they acquired a whole lot of really bad mortgage loans. Not only that, they acquired books that were pretty murky, and it's taken them this long, years, to get to the bottom of those losses.
And are those losses, these toxic assets, hurting the whole banking sector, or is this Bank of America specific at this point?
There's a handful of banks that are suffering from this, but of the big banks, this is pretty much unique to B of A.
And so is that what B of A is going to be looking at going forward here? Is it going to be all about mortgages? Are there other issues that they'll be looking at?
Unfortunately, there are other issues. And look, the market was up on Monday because J.P. Morgan reported strong earnings, down by the end of the day. And the reason is we're now starting to worry about Dodd-Frank. These are the new big regulatory changes that are coming that's going to make it hard even for healthy banks to make money.
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Google said its earnings were up more than 25% in the first 3 months of the year, but investors seem more interested in the spending spree Google is on right now under the direction of its new CEO and co-founder, Larry Page. Google is investing more in new technologies and businesses and hirings, and as Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports, all that spending is making investors a little nervous about the bottom line.
One of the places Google's spending all that money is on people. The company's planning to hire more than 6,000 people this year. It hired almost 2,000 in the first quarter. And at the beginning of the year, people who were already working there got 10% raises. Google is searching for new sources of revenue beyond its basic search business. It's trying to earn more money from other kinds of ads, and it's trying to compete with Facebook and other social networking sites. Henry Blodgett is editor at Business Insider. He says there's a tension between Google and investors because Wall Street is so impatient.
What Google is doing with investing is basically saying we're investing for the long haul. And Wall Street appreciates that theoretically, but they want the money right now.
He says Google's doing what it should be, trying to expand. And it may be growing up as a company. Its earnings are healthy. They're just not as stratospheric as they were for a while. This is also the first earnings report since Google's co-founder Larry Page took over as CEO. And investors are nervous he may be more of an engineer than a businessman. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Word today from the government that consumer prices rose 0.5% in March. But the nation's so-called core inflation level, which doesn't include energy and food prices, only nudged up about 0.1%.
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch, and she's with us from New York, as she is every Friday. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So inflation usually indicates the economy is growing too quickly. Why are prices rising if the economy still is isn't, as we all have heard, firing at all cylinders.
Well, you know, after the debt bubble burst and the Great Recession began, we entered a period of really low prices. And the Fed's policies since then were actually aimed at lifting prices so that we didn't slide into a deflationary period when prices go down. Now those policies are combining with a lot of growth in emerging economies and putting pressure on prices. But more so on that headline number, that top number, which does exclude energy and food, than the core number that strips them out.
Let's talk about that, how the government takes out energy and food to determine the so-called core inflation. But I still have to buy gas, and I still have to buy bread and milk at the grocery store. Why does the government take that stuff out?
Well, the government knows that we still have to pay for those things. But Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke has said that core inflation is a better predictor of where overall inflation is headed, because food and energy are really volatile, and they can distort the inflationary landscape. So the Fed relies on this core number to help it form its policy. And right now, the Fed's unofficial target for core CPI is 2%. Through the 12 months ended in March, the core has increased only 1.2%. So Fed governors are likely to maintain their current policies.
CPI, all right, Consumer Price Index. We thank you, Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch.
Take care.
A delegation of California lawmakers is in Texas today looking into why California has shed jobs over the last 3 years while Texas has created them. From Austin, Ben Philpott reports.
It's a challenge Texas Governor Rick Perry often makes. Leave what he calls high-tax California and come to low-tax Texas. So California Assemblyman Dan Logue brought a bipartisan group of lawmakers to ask some recent defectors why they made the move and what would bring them back.
We're here to talk about primarily jobs. If you don't grow the economy, everything else doesn't matter.
But are taxes really lower in Texas than the Golden State? A report by the Council on State Taxation, a D.C.-based tax research group, showed Texas businesses actually have a higher tax burden. But the report takes into account California's artificially suppressed property taxes, thanks to the 1970s ballot initiative, Prop 13. Doug Lindholm heads up the group.
So if you look at private sector product, the burden in Texas is higher, but that's, again, attributable to the fact that California has a lower property tax rate on both businesses and individuals, unless, of course, you sell that property.
Once you sell a property, it no longer falls under Prop 13's tax protection. So Lindholm says leaving California probably wouldn't help established businesses. But in most cases, startups would be better off in the Lone Star State than in California. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
More news of inflation in China. Beijing said consumer prices jumped another 5.4% over a year ago. And remember that policymakers there have already boosted interest rates four times in the last 6 months to cool inflation.
Moody's cut Ireland's debt rating today two notches to just above junk status. You can check out more numbers at our numbers section inside marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, we're 6 weeks into the fighting in Libya, and President Obama has just co-authored an op-ed standing firm on the mission to oust the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi.
But even U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has said it's going to be political and economic pressure that eventually leads to Gaddafi's ouster. For more on the economic side of things, we're joined now by the former British ambassador to Libya, Sir Richard Dalton. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are the economic pressures at this point, and how serious are they for Gaddafi?
Inability to sell their oil, collapse of the labor market. There is money in Tripoli, but they are going increasingly, as the months go by, to live from hand to mouth.
I saw that the group of five nations called the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, these emerging economies, just said that the use of force should be avoided in Libya. What's that all about?
Well, that's about marking a separate position from the coalition, but without going so far as to antagonize the powerful countries represented at the United Nations and in the coalition.
But why do they want to have a separate position?
They want to play it both ways. So whether Gaddafi stays or there is a victory for democratic forces, they want to be able to say that they had a part in it. So they don't want to commit themselves too strongly to any one course of action at present.
They want to be able to do deals with whoever ends up being in power in Libya.
Yes. I mean, that's true for everybody because Libyan oil is important in the long run. And Libya, as a prosperous country in North Africa, although a country only with a population only of about 7 million, is a significant medium-scale trade partner for many countries on both sides of the Atlantic.
Sir Richard Dalton, former British ambassador to Libya, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Finance ministers from the group of G20 developed countries are meeting in Washington today, including Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, who keeps pushing the Obama administration's confidence that the U.S. Congress will raise our nation's debt ceiling. Well, that's despite calls from some Republican House members to cut spending even more before they sign on.
And yet, in spite of all the political gridlock in Washington, there is no sign, at least for now, that foreign investors have lost faith in the United States. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
There may be a crisis in Washington, but financial markets are calm. There may be no agreement to raise the debt ceiling. There may even be talk of default as early as July, but investors remain unruffled. Neil McKinnon of VTP Capital Group says that's because we've been here before.
Over the years, there has been these instances where the debt ceiling has been in danger of being breached, but there has been a resolution at the very last minute to avoid that.
And, says McKinnon, even if the debt ceiling is not raised, the government can still pay its way by selling its substantial stock of Treasury bills. But, he says, there's no doubt that if the US doesn't begin to get its huge budget deficit under control in the medium term, investors will take fright and dump the dollar. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Japanese government today ordered Tokyo Electric Power, or TEPCO, to pay families who were affected by the utility's crippled and radiation-leaking Fukushima nuclear plant. The BBC's Roland Burke is with us now from Tokyo with the latest this morning. Hi, Roland.
Hi, Steve.
So how much will the victims get?
The payment is $12,000 per household, per family. And the people who are going to get it are those whose homes were within 12 miles of the plant. Those are people who were ordered to evacuate. And those whose homes are between 12 and 19 miles away from the plant. That's what's been called here the stay inside zone. But of course, many of those people are in evacuation centres. They don't know if they'll ever be able to go home. They're not just lost where they live. They've lost their businesses and their jobs as well.
And how much will TEPCO be paying total, Roland?
Well, the total is about 50 billion yen, which is around $600 million. But this is really the tip of the iceberg. This is a company that faces enormous compensation bills in the coming months. One estimate has put it at around $24 billion.
How do you figure out the math on accidents like these? Is there a formula?
I think the problem and the reason why survivors are annoyed is that so far there hasn't been any mass. They're getting a flat payment. And I think their concern is that there's no sign at the moment that they can see that the mass is being done.
The BBC's Roland Burke in Tokyo. Roland, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve, it turns out the debit card idea has been around a little longer than we thought.
Really? Cash machines?
That's right. Yeah, okay. Well, sort of. Archaeologists in Germany have discovered a 453-year-old wooden tally stick.
Oh.
It has little nicks in it that were used to keep track of people's debts. There is no evidence so far of just what the interchange fees were that the cobblers and weavers used to charge customers to use the debit stick. And we still don't know what exactly the out-of-kingdom ATM fees
were. Oh, the out-of-kingdom, of course, of course. You go out of the kingdom, you're going to pay.
You're going to pay at least $3.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The head of the Federal Aviation Administration's Air Traffic Division has resigned. That's after the storm over controllers sleeping on the job. As Marketplace's Janet Babin reports, new air traffic controllers are going to be tough to find, even in this economy.
It may be news to us that air traffic controllers sleep on the job. But industry insiders say it happens all the time.
We have an endemic system where the graveyard shift is a sleep shift across the nation.
That's aviation consultant Michael Boyd. Controllers often work double shifts and a mix of days and nights. The FAA has ordered air traffic towers to put two controllers on the overnight shift, but finding enough staff could be a challenge. Aviation consultant Michael Goldfarb says a wave of controllers is retiring and there aren't enough new recruits.
It takes 3 to 4 years to get a competent controller trained, and the FAA is suffering from an attrition of controllers and from a lack of adequate emphasis on fully staffing the facilities.
The agency says it wants to hire thousands of new controllers by 2017. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Today is the day thousands of retailers in Illinois had been dreading. That's because they're going to lose their affiliation with online shopping sites like Amazon and Overstock.com thanks to a new state sales tax for online purchases. Tony Arnold reports now from Chicago Public Radio.
Brad Wilson runs the aptly named BradsDeals.com, a coupon website based in downtown Chicago.
Ultimately, Amazon and Overstock hold the trump card in this situation.
Wilson says after today, Amazon will boycott business with Brad's Deals and roughly 9,000 other retailers in Illinois to skirt the tax. Illinois residents can still go online and get the latest bestseller from Amazon. They just won't be getting that book from any Amazon affiliate in Illinois.
We're looking at a lot of options that I wouldn't want to have ever had to think of, unfortunately.
Wilson says he's considering picking up shop and relocating to another state to make up for the money he'll lose. He wouldn't say how much. One Amazon affiliate, FatWallet.com, has already moved its headquarters from Illinois to Wisconsin, which doesn't have the online tax. Amazon did not respond to requests for comment. Meantime, Overstock.com's president, Jonathan Johnson, confirmed his company plans to cut off Illinois affiliates on May 1st. Others, like Zappos and Shoes.com, are planning a similar move. David Veit is with the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. He says the Amazons and Overstocks are shirking their responsibility to communities by ducking the sales tax.
Unfortunately, Amazon has chosen to ignore the laws of the states in which it does business, and that is putting brick-and-mortar retailers at a competitive disadvantage.
Veit estimates Illinois could gain an extra $130 million a year from the new sales tax, while Brad Wilson from BradsDeals.com says Illinois could lose more money from businesses fleeing the state. Meantime, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin plans to introduce a bill to require online retailers to pay state sales tax. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
This week, Florida GOP Congressman Cliff Stearns introduced an updated online privacy bill that would require companies to disclose how they'll use personal information. Now, some tech firms aren't waiting for new laws to be enacted. The Wall Street Journal reports Apple is just the latest to add a do not track tool to its Safari internet browser. And John Moe is host of Marketplace Tech Report. He's with us now to talk about it. Morning, John.
Hi, Steve.
So how does a do not track option help me?
Well, it blocks advertisers from tracking you as you go around the internet looking at things, maybe buying things. Not being tracked, it's a privacy thing more than anything. You're stopping them from building a big profile of you that they can then use to sell you more stuff. And of course, the only way it actually does help you is if you switch it on, and most people never will.
Apple seems like just the latest company to add this to their browser. Why has this become such a sought-after feature?
It really started heating up late last year. That's when the Federal Trade Commission came out and said all browsers should have this feature. And everybody took that should to mean eventually they're going to be required to have that feature. So everybody started getting on it right away. Microsoft was the first to get on it. Mozilla followed suit with Firefox. Google offered an extension for Chrome, a little thing you could download to add to Chrome. And now here comes Apple putting it in the next big version of Safari.
And Google isn't making it very easy, though, to do this do not track, right?
The cynical approach, of course, is Google makes mountains of money, Mount Everest's full of dollar bills that they can roll in off of advertising and knowledge working together. That's the Google business model. So to make tracking harder cuts into that. And, you know, why do you cut into your cash flow? But if you're in a competitive marketplace like browsers, you don't want to be seen as the browser that is lax on privacy or lax on security. So eventually that is going to override everything, I think.
Is this, John, part of any broader push, do you think, like as far as legislation goes in the Congress right now?
Yeah, it's a big topic in Washington. John Kerry and John McCain joined forces to introduce a bill in the Senate about privacy. And, you know, it's an easy political win, too. protect your privacy. I'm the guy that did that. So, yeah, everybody's getting on board.
Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe. John, thanks.
Thanks.
And finally, you've heard this guy.
Can you hear me now?
Good.
You heard that guy, right?
Of course. The Verizon guy.
Right? Yeah, the Verizon guy. But you won't be seeing much of him anymore on those TV commercials. Yeah, the actor Paul Marcinelli told The Atlantic Monthly. They did like an expose on him in The Atlantic, right?
Expose.
They did. It was really nice. The wireless carrier is going to go a different route in its next ad campaign and not include the test man. That's what he's called, the test man.
Yep.
Marcarelli is still under contract with Verizon, so he hasn't gotten disconnected just yet.
Although I'm sure that we're going to be hearing Can You Hear Me Now for years and years to come.
Oh, that will, yeah, that will
probably,
keep on,
however,
keeping on.
From people using all kinds of different phone networks, if the service is anything like it is for me, and I won't mention any names.
Okay.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.